Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 73, Jackson's Murder Ring.
Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Ed. And 1,000 miles over there to my left is another host, Mr. Stephen Orr.
Hello.
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 And hopefully we will answer the question, who the heck is Jackson? Because that's kind of a big deal as far as the title of the story.
Yeah. And without giving anything away at all, it wasn't till I got to the end of the story and was putting the show notes together, and I put that title in, Jackson's Murder Ring, that I kind of went, oh, that title has two meanings, kind of,
yeah. Yeah, I sat there for several minutes trying to piece together on the last, I guess it would be page or maybe two pages, the three dudes and the color suits and who did what and said what and Superman did what. And, I have a little chart here. Again, this is a story that had two parts, and so you keep up with one part, and then the other part comes in, and you got to see how the parts connect, and it's like, yeah, big bulletin board with things tacked onto it, and yarn, connecting the thumbtacks as you do all these. Yeah, that was...
Yeah, sometimes the coloring just makes it almost impossible just to, separate the different characters. It's like, just put a hat on one of the guys,
something, or make none of them have facial hair, but one has a mustache, or just something to make it easy to tell them apart. But they do it to some extent, but I don't think they do it as well as they could.
No,
So
I got a little bit of banter.
Okay.
For our official banter segment. When the first, they got the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power show on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. And we got Amazon Prime for a couple of months back when the first season started. I think they were doing a deal, like your first 3 months for so much a month, and then it goes up to regular price after that.
Right.
But I watched the full season each week as the episodes were coming out, and I really enjoyed it. I really dug the show. It was really good. And I used the time to get all caught up on the Reacher show.
Yes.
And another good Jack, one. Jack Ryan, that show.
Another good one. Yeah. Yeah.
So then we canceled Prime.
Okay.
Season 2 of Rings of Power starts up, and I tell everybody, I'm like, all right, so as soon as all of the episodes of this season of Rings of Power are up, when it comes time to pay for one of our other streaming services, we're going to cancel that for a month, and we're going to do Prime for a month so I can get caught up. And so that's what I do. And I sit down the other day and I start watching. I decided I'm going to watch the first season over again.
Okay.
And I start watching the first season, and it starts out with a couple of commercials, which a lot of times they do anymore. But then 20 minutes into the show, there's an ad break. And I was like, did I pay for the service that gives you ad? Do I need to upgrade? And I'm looking all over, and from what I can tell, if you're doing Amazon Prime, you're getting ads, period. There's not an option to go up a level to do no ads.
And I've not seen that for Prime either.
I just find that really weird that they wouldn't even give you the option. It's like that was the purpose of the streaming services, right? So you could stream the stuff. You're paying for the service, there shouldn't be ads. And then one or two of them said, you know what? Let's go ahead and do ads. But will offer a higher tier so you can not
ad free.
Yeah. And that makes sense because even cable, which you had to pay for, you got commercials. So it's not like it's a foreign concept for me, but for Amazon Prime to then go, you know what? I think we're going to do ads too, but screw all those guys who don't want ads. You're just going to have to deal with it. We're not going to give you the option to pay a higher price.
Well, but just think, remember all the way back to terrestrial TV, you had the offer of cable so that there were those aspects of terrestrial TV you didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
So you get cable instead. Yeah. Well, you got cable. So then to avoid those things cable is doing, you get satellite. Well, now to avoid those things that terrestrial and cable and satellite are doing, you get streaming. And now streaming does, I mean, it just follows.
Yeah.
They say that they won't, they get people to subscribe, and then either they lied to begin with, or they find out that their business model doesn't work without that, so then they do that also.
Yep.
And it just, you know, that is something, when we first started playing with streaming, I noticed every time, here, do this, because it's not like that, you know, but then eventually, well, it gets to be just like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so.
Well, I distinctly remember back in the day watching MTV and one of their news stories came on and they were talking about the advent of the compact disc.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they were showing, you know, you can now get these in stores, and they came in the long cardboard packages with the CD up on top, and then the rest was just air for some reason. And they specifically said in that news story that the record companies have announced that, you know, they're converting all their artists over to CDs, and this is the price point that they will be for now. And after a couple of years, the price will go down once CD becomes the norm.
You're paying for the new technology, but eventually it won't be the new, and the prices will come down.
And while CD players, the prices did go down, CDs never. They may not have gone up with inflation, maybe, but they never went down in price.
No, no. You, as an early adopter, you never got the benefit of the reduced price eventually.
Yeah.
Speaking of Amazon Prime, now you know that there is a second season of Reacher that should be available also.
Yes, I think I've watched the first two seasons. And I know that there's a third season coming.
Yes.
And it's been renewed for a fourth season.
Exactly. So there's two Rings of Power, two Reacher. Now, Jack Ryan has multiple seasons, but they've all dropped and it's gone. They're not going back to that. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Which that last scene in the last episode of the last season of Reacher is one of the best scenes of TV that I have seen in a very long time, where he goes and confronts the senator in the Senate hearing because the senator was behind. And it's like, I know that you were behind it and you know that you were behind it, but of course I can't prove it.
Yeah.
But I'm letting you know that I know.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good stuff.
It was. I mean, he just, his balls were huge, and he supported it. It's like, yep.
That's what I always liked about Jack Reacher, and because I'm sure Tom Clancy was a conservative, just based on his subject that he wrote about and blah, blah, blah. But I always felt that Jack Reacher was kind of nonpartisan. He never took a side, you know, Democrat or Republican or anything like that. Conservative,
his side
liberal.
Was right.
Exactly.
That was his line. Yep, right and wrong was his line.
That's what I always liked about the books.
That was fun.
Comes across in the show as well. So,
yep. Now, you know, the movie that's got Tom Cruise in it.
The Reacher movie?
Yeah, the Reacher movie. The author of those novels is on record as saying, No, that's not Reacher. Reacher is, you know, 8 foot tall and 4 foot wide and goes about 400 pounds. That's Reacher.
But what's funny about that is when the movie was doing its first rounds of publicity, he was saying something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
See, he had to support it.
Well, because he got money off of that.
Right.
So
at that point, he was saying, well, you know, yeah, I know that Jack Reacher's like 6'2". 250 pounds, and Tom Cruise isn't physically the same size as Reacher, but Reacher is he's like a force of nature, and Tom Cruise can really emulate being a force of nature. And it's like, all right,
and,
okay.
And I don't necessarily disagree with that.
Yeah.
That character, the way it's portrayed, benefits by being portrayed by a smaller man in a different way than it benefits by being portrayed by a big giant of a man, yeah, like it is on the TV series. So it depending on how it's played, both ways can work for different reasons.
Yeah.
So that's okay. I like the series better than the movies, but
I do too.
That's just me.
I do too. I mean, the fact of the matter is his size is part of the story. I mean, it's not something that they just happen to mention in the first book that he's just a big dude. It comes up all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so, because he is. Yeah. Everywhere he goes, he's a big, imposing dude. Yeah.
All right.
Ready to carry on, my wayward son?
Let's do this.
Alrighty, folks. Today, we're looking at Jackson's Murder Ring, which is the fourth and final Superman story in Superman number 9. And I say it that way because I haven't actually looked at the book to see if there's anything else in there. I don't think there is, but just in case, I'll leave that in there. This is written for us by Jerry Siegel with art by Paul Cassidy. And to catch you up, here's what happened. Investigating the death of Morton Carling brings Lois and Clark to the offices of Nelson and Lassiter attorneys. They're informed that Carling received death threats and was possibly killed by one of his 40 heirs. Clark and Lois question the heirs, but while doing so, Clark is kidnapped by some thugs. He's thrown from a car during a chase between the thugs and police, but he gets the telephone number of the crook's boss. Visiting the Jackson Jewel Company, where the call originated, Superman spots Jackson selling worthless jewels for large sums of money. Lois, also investigating, is caught by Jackson, forcing Superman to make a rescue. Lois recovers evidence that the Jewel Company is a front for a murder ring. Superman follows Jackson back to Nelson and Lassiter, who were responsible for Carling's death. The crooks turn on each other, but Superman rounds them all up, turning them over to the police. Now, I do want to add here, visiting the Jackson Jewel Company, where the call originated, that's not where the call originated, that's where the call went.
Yep, yep.
So, doesn't sound like a big difference, but as far as how Superman found out,
yeah,
it makes all the difference which way the call went. So,
yeah, I thought the way he memorized the phone number, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Very, very clever. It's been a long time since I've heard or dealt with a dial rotary phone. I don't necessarily know that I remember that it clicked the number of times for the number. Maybe it does. I thought it just almost like buzzed. You let it go bzzzt, and I didn't know that there was
maybe clicks. The rotary phones they had in 1940.
Maybe they were connected to the actual digit and it did something. Yeah, I don't know. But still, clever nonetheless. Okay, so looking at the story, we have the splash page here. Or splash panel, takes up about a third of the first page. Superman in a tussle here with about five different guys in an office, and he's just darting in from off panel, kind of taking the men on, which is quasi a scene that happens, but not taken by itself,
it looks like he's just like leaped into a random office to beat up office workers.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this scene actually has three people, right, I think, because the dude with the cup. I think there were just three when the closest scene to this actually happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so we start out very morbidly, I thought.
Brutal.
This was probably as morbid as a Superman story has, definitely has started, maybe even has gotten since we've been reading them.
Yeah, it's dark.
But Lois and Clark are walking, does it say they're going somewhere? They're just walking near Metropolis Towers. I don't know. They're walking downtown by an apartment building. And Clark sees and directs Lois's attention to someone falling. So Clark, runs away from the others or up towards the building or something. He separates himself a little bit. And as he does, he's looking at the dude falling, trying to figure out how a Superman he can do something and not give away Clark Kent Superman. In doing that, he realizes via his telescopic vision that actually this isn't a dude falling. It's a dead body falling. So the dude's already dead. Well, goodness, that makes the decision up for Clark because he decides, I'll just let him hit anyways. So he runs over to Lois and kind of, cowers her so she's not exposed to this big sack of meat hitting the concrete from, what do we see? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Or actually, he tells us, doesn't he, what floor it is? Does he say the 10th floor? 20th floor, the legal firm of Nelson and Lassiter. So if that's where this dude fell from, he fell approximately 200 feet at 63 feet per second squared. I remember that from my college days, which for those of you that don't understand mathematically what that means, for every 63 feet he falls, his speed or the speed of an object in Earth's gravity, for every 63 feet it falls, its speed doubles. So in 200 feet, his speed has trebled at one point. So that's how fast. And that's anything falling in Earth's gravity. And so, yeah, he did the wet bag of cement on the street there. And that supposedly is like the sound of what a body makes if it hit. Now, you know, in movies and TVs, you don't see that very often. You see him fall on a car or fall on something. But yeah, it's been described as sounding like a wet sack of concrete when it hits a surface like the street.
Every once in a while, you'll catch a TV show or a movie where they have them actually hit the sidewalk. And it's like if they hit the car, if they hit a car, something like that, it's like it's bad. It's always like, ugh. But when they just hit the ground like that, you're just like, oh.
Yeah. It just.
So reading this, it's like all they put is the word thud. But that's I heard in my mind when I read thud, I heard the sound of a wet sack of cement hitting the ground.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because you knew what it was making that sound. So
it's squelching. It's
like, yeah. Here, let me substitute my sound for that one.
It was just dark.
Yep.
As soon as I got to that point, because I'm like right there, like, oh, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? He's got to save this guy. How is he going to save this guy? That's what I'm focused on. And the moment he goes, oh, he's already dead. I was like, oh, shit, he's just going to let him drop.
He's going to let him. It's like, oh, no. Yep.
And there's a whole range of emotions that I went through just from those two panels.
Yep. Which I can only assume is what they wanted you to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the way it's set up and the way it's written and so they're hanging out here. Or are they outside? Yeah, they're still outside. The police get there and our favorite officer, Sergeant Casey, is one of the responding police officers.
Wearing yellow hats. It's an odd coloring choice.
So they check out the body. Casey does, checks out the body, and he says he's got a card. The dude's name is Morton Carling, but he has a Nelson and Lassiter card on him. And oddly enough, the main offices of Nelson and Lassiter are in this very building. They do a little investigating, find out on the 20th floor. So we have a dead body. He has a card on him from this office. In the same building, Lois and Clark decide to go up to that office and start asking questions there. Sounds reasonable to me so far. So they go up and they talk to Mr. Lassiter, one of the namesakes of the firm. And he's like, no, I know of Mr. Carling, but I didn't do anything with him. Ask my partner, Nelson. He handled Mr. Carling's affairs. So, okay. So the pass off there to the other named partner. And, you know, you kind of see him think a moment. He says, well, perhaps you're right. During the last months, Carling continually complained that he was receiving death threats over the phone and from strangers who passed him on the crowded street. We complained to Sergeant Casey, but the sergeant, after investigating, decided our client had an overactive imagination. And then the other partner, Lassiter, comes in and says, he warned us to protect our client from suicide. He, I would imagine, is Sergeant Casey.
Yeah.
But today, he unexpectedly leapt through the window. So now we know that he was at their offices and he jumped out their window, right? So a little bit more of a connection. Whether you believe what the men are saying or not, you know, whatever, that's what the rest of the story is for. But as far as Lois and Clark, they have some firm connections now. They can continue. Probably the best connections in an investigation that they have had in a very long time as far as connecting dots. They run out of dots after talking to the two men, but at least they were able to connect some and they have a place to continue to investigate and research from this firm. Then, who is it? Nelson tells them he was left a life insurance, or he was left a life interest in an estate of $20 million. So Carling got an inheritance of $20 million. Well, obviously, that's why he jumped out a window, because he had $20 million. That's like, well, okay. Now that he has passed, 40 new heirs will each inherit $500,000. No explanation of how in the heck this man has 40 heirs. And I mean, are they related, or was it just written, these are like, people I worked with, or
who knows?
But 40, 40. Usually you'll see, two, three, five, and they're all family, maybe cousins and stuff. But no, this is 40 heirs, and they don't say anything more than that.
Right. I don't know. I'm assuming the purpose of coming up with 40 heirs, of course, is that leaves a lot of suspects. And Lois has to go investigate 20 of them. Clark has to go investigate 20 of them. But we don't see them really. They could have said 10, and it would have had the same impact.
Well, they could have said a couple.
Yeah.
One is on this side of the country and one is on that side of the country. And that would have separated them just as easily as anything else. I mean, ultimately, that's what they're wanting to do. Once again, they're wanting to send Lois in one direction and Clark in another.
Yeah.
So so they do that. As Stephen said, Lois takes 20 and Clark takes 20. And Clark whines about having to talk to 20 people.
He sure does.
Lois doesn't seem to bat an eye, but Clark's like, really, 20? In his best Jerry Lewis impression there. So we follow first Clark. He goes out, door slammed in his face, basically door slammed in his face. Well, when he gets done, he now realizes, I guess because he has time to not focus on what he's doing or what's next, but just to relax a little bit. He realizes that he is being tailed in a car as he's driving, back to the paper, I guess, or maybe to try to pick up Lois or something like that. Who knows? But he's driving away from the last of the 20 people, 20 heirs that he talked to, and he gets run off the road by the car that's following him, smashing into a pole, and he uses that accident to feign being unconscious. So the men who are following him grab him unconscious, so they think, toss him in their car, and take off to their headquarters with this news hound interloper that's been talking to people that are related to the $20 million that obviously these two men something have a hand in, they want, somehow they're connected.
And real quick, they make a point to point out that Clark is heavy. This guy is heavy. And so that makes me wonder, because every once in a while, not every time, and we don't see them do it in this issue, but when somebody like punches Clark in the chin, every once in a while they'll be like, man, it was like hitting a brick wall. And that combined with, bullets bounce off of him, knives break and blah, blah, blah. Is he just super dense? That's why he's heavy. And that's why he's unbreakable.
He's invulnerable. Yep. Which now quickly, of course, being invulnerable has absolutely nothing to do with having super strength. They're two different powers. Right. A lot of people think, well, if he can lift an elephant, he's invulnerable. It's like, no, you can still shoot him.
Yeah.
He can just lift an elephant. It's, they're two different things.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is a strong dude, but I could stab him with a knife.
Yeah, right. He still has the same pitfalls that us regular humans do. He can just do the things we do while he's holding a car.
Yeah.
It's the difference. Or could once upon a time. I don't imagine he could do that now, but.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
Okay, so the two bad guys, the two thugs, I guess, get Clark into their headquarters, and a third thug who maybe, yeah, no, not yet. This is just a nameless dude. We haven't gotten into the named, any of the named people yet.
Yeah.
Another bad guy who's a little bit higher up than the two, but not as high as the dudes in charge. He's middle management in the thuggery operation here. He wakes Clark up by smacking him in the head. He pulls him by the head of his hair, pulls his head back, and smacks him with the other hand. Which is funny. Clark was never unconscious to begin with. So he's playing this whole time. The smack does not knock his glasses off either. So it wasn't a very good smack, I don't think. More like a tap.
Yeah.
And so here Clark says, well, I know somebody murdered Carling, and I bet it was you guys. And so that's like the dude that woke him up says, well, that is probably the last thing you really wanted to say to us.
Yep.
So Clark was right. You know, obviously he was testing some waters, and yeah, these guys have something to do with it. We don't know for sure yet. They don't really let us know anything until later in the story. But this is obviously that they know something at the very least.
Yeah.
They know something that they don't want Clark to find out and tell anybody else is what I was getting from the story. So, this dude that was beating up on Clark dials his boss. Turns out the boss is at the Jackson Jewelry Company, so that would probably make him Mr. Jackson that he's talking to. Now, this is something that I brought up at the top of the episode. Clark listens to this rotary phone and memorizes the clicks for the number that is being called, and then at a later point matches that phone number up with where it went and finds out that the Jackson Jewelry Company was the destination of this call. So he, using his Superman powers, connects a couple more dots there. So the talking to Mr. Jackson, he tells the thugs who have Clark to get rid of him. He probably knows too much, and even if he doesn't know too much, who cares? Get rid of him. So that way we don't have to worry about him. So once again, they dump him in a car and they're zooming around town and they blow a stoplight. I'm glad this doesn't happen today. They blow a stoplight, and soon after, or at the time that they run the stoplight, they're seen by a couple police in a patrol car. One of them is, once again, our Sergeant Casey. Okay, now he is starting to get around quite a bit.
Yeah.
Sergeant Casey is. So Sergeant Casey and another patrolman see, we'll just say they see this car blow through the stoplight, and they take off in pursuit. Well, they're trying to flag down, I guess, with sirens and whatnot. Maybe even they have a speaker, you know, that they're telling them to pull over. The car with the thugs and Clark are not going to pull over because they have kidnapped Clark. They're wanting to kill him somewhere. And the very last thing they want to do is stop for the police and answer questions about what they're doing, you know, because heaven forbid they have to lie. So anyways, they won't stop. So in not stopping, it is then warranted for Sergeant Casey to unholster his gun and first fire a warning shot. I'm not exactly sure how that works. But then he shoots a couple more times through the back windshield of the car they're pursuing. Now, I don't know if those were the warning shots or not. If they are, that's a hell of a warning. I mean, I'm sorry. That's like, you know, dude. So, you know, I'm glad. You know, I have blown a stop sign or two in my time. One time I was pulled over after doing it. I'm glad that that's not why I was pulled over, is because dude was taking shots at me. I thought that that's kind of extreme. But maybe that's just me. I don't know.
And Clark's reaction to the pair of bullets coming in through that back window is funny. Help! Bullets!
Bullets.
Just because, you know, he's acting. And so that's what makes it even funnier. And the thug, who's just been pissed off at Clark this whole time because Clark won't shut his mouth. He doesn't even care about the bullets. He just would just shut your yap.
That's all he cares about is Clark is continuing to go on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, these bullets look like they should have gotten the thug.
Yeah.
From where he's sitting and everything. Yeah. So, you know, all of their efforts, including taking shots at the car is not pulling over. So Casey puts in a call for some assistance. In answer to Casey's broadcast, police cars head toward James Street from all directions. So I now am getting the image of like an O.J. Simpson type car chase, you know, where the car, you can't outspeed them. So you're going to slow down to 15 miles an hour and just keep going, yep. not stopping. And the cars are just starting to pile up and back up behind you. You know, I pictured that kind of car chase as opposed to the everybody zhuzhing by at 80 miles an hour, you know, just car after car after car.
I don't know.
I like the first image better.
I'm kind of picturing that last car chase scene in the Blues Brothers.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There we go.
And is it, you know, I think I mentioned last week, not in the last episode, that I'm a bit colorblind. Is it me or are a lot of these cars pink?
No, they seem to be pink. Okay. In this one panel, I don't know if that's the car they're chasing or it shouldn't be Lois's car, although Lois's car is in two different colors here below.
Yeah. Yep.
This red car, I don't know who the red car there at the top of the panel is. I don't. Because it's red, whereas yep. all the other cars are whatever color you want to say. To me, they look pink. So obviously that one was made to be different, but I don't know why. Their car, maybe it's their car. Their car is kind of a brownish.
Yeah.
So if in four color you miscolored it, I guess it could be red.
Yeah.
So then we find out that Lois, she has finished her 20 attempted interviews, and it doesn't really say, but I kind of suspect that her interviews turned out the same as Clark's did. She probably didn't get anywhere because there's nowhere to get, really. She is listening on her shortwave. I didn't know this is the way shortwave works, but I think of shortwave as amateur radio now. And police two-way communication is not going to come over typically, I don't think, amateur wavelengths.
Maybe anyways, back then.
Yeah. So she turns on to see if anything is going on, and she catches Casey asking for help, and then the updates from the different patrol cars, I'm sure, as they're getting involved. So she's like, oh, James Street, that's only a block away. Maybe I can write an eyewitness account. She thinks something else is going on, and she's just in the right place at the right time to check into it. Well, she turns onto James Street, just in time to get caught in the line of fire. So she makes the convoy. Ain't she a beautiful sight? In between the Sergeant Casey's pursuing car, which I guess should be the lead pursuit, and the car that Clark Kent is in, she gets in between them. So she gets in the line of fire as Casey is continuing to fire on this car. Apparently, his couple times that didn't do anything weren't enough. He just kept going after all. At some point, it's going to work. If I just fire enough, it'll, you know.
And that makes me think of the scene from Raising Arizona, where they're chasing high and just blam, 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 blam.
Yep. So Casey tells him, even though he is the one shooting, he says, lower your guns. It's the Daily Planet hoodoo. Lois Lane in the way. The Daily Planet hoodoo. I don't understand why she's a hoodoo. But and the other officer here in the car says, leave it up to her to turn up and mess things. And actually, there's a third guy in this patrol car. When we first saw him, there were just two. Yeah. So now, not only have other cars joined the chase, but a man has joined in their car to help out. So we're zipping on down, and the bad guys decide that they can't get away. So what they need to do is they need to ditch the evidence. So they throw Clark out the car. Lois is the next car up. So now she has to avoid hitting Clark, and she swerves in such a way that it takes out Sergeant Casey in the first police pursuit car. And I would imagine the entire pursuit, you know, they just stack up like we always see, going over the embankments and crossing other lanes and jumping through billboards and all that kind of stuff. That's a Smokey and the Bandit reference. As they all stop because she has blocked the road. She hops out of the car, checks and sees that Clark is okay. Casey jumps out of the car. All three of them have a three-panel little beefy back-and-forth kind of snipping at each other here. Ultimately, Lois pulls the lead card, and she says, well, you know, I should be pissed because Clark didn't thank me. He never does anything, never appreciates anything that I do from him. And instead, he just complains. She says, you're both just so lucky I'm a lady I guess, meaning, or I would give you a piece of my mind or tell you what I'm really thinking.
Or she'd start throwing hands.
There you go. So that scene is over. Lois and Clark head back to the Daily Planet, start making some phone calls, you know, to try to get some more information. Well, Clark, when he was captured, of course, now he has those numbers in his head. So he makes a quick call to figure out where the number went. As he's figuring it out, getting the information, Lois picks up on another line and overhears the conversation. So he is told, and she overhears, that the phone number is to the Jackson Jewelry Company, that the dude called when they had Clark tied up for instructions as to what to do. So Clark changes into Superman and takes off. But before, as Superman, he can get to the jewelry company, Lois has already left and gets to the jewelry company before him. I'm not sure how that works. She sees Mr. Nelson of Nelson and Lassiter going into Mr. Jackson of Jackson's jewelry company, his main office. So she wants to get an inroad. She plays to being a friend of the secretary and starts trying to get information from some of the custodial staff about the secretary at so-and-so's office. So we have a panel there. Superman arrives up on the roof. He's checking with his microscopic vision down through however many floors, and he sees, what would it be? He sees Nelson selling a large diamond to Jackson, who pays $50,000 for it. Well, Superman can tell that the diamond is not real. Does he say it's glass or it's fake? He says it's glass. So, interestingly enough, we don't know that there's any connection between these two, the Nelson Lassiter or the Jackson Jewelry, but we do know that Jackson is directly involved because his connection to the dudes that kidnapped Clark. So now we have Jackson buying bogus jewelry from Nelson and Lassiter. So there's an interesting connection so far. Jackson notices outside someone is snooping in his window. So here we have one can only assume a Superman hanging from the window.
Yeah.
We only see his shadow. Actually, the window is not apparently a window that you can see through. It's opaque rather than see-through because he just sees the shadow of Superman. Takes a couple shots at him, runs over to the window to check for the body, I guess. I don't know. He's already been involved in one dude perhaps falling to his death, perhaps. So he goes to the window and nope, instead of falling, if he did hit the dude managed to climb up. So Jackson goes out into the hallway and goes up to the roof of the building and is waiting for Superman because he is still Superman as he climbs up. So he climbs up, fakes being injured. Jackson maybe takes another shot at him, can't really tell. Well, no, here he does in the next panel. Takes another shot at Superman, supposedly killing Superman because Superman tries to get him to stop, but then fakes being shot and injured and falls off of the building. He falls onto a bumble. Oh, there's another reference. What is that? Santa Claus is Coming to Town? Is that the name of that? Bumbles Don't Bounce?
It's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yes, sorry. And actually, at first, Bumbles do bounce.
Yeah.
Like Superman. He bounces off of the street and, we don't know because we have a couple panels here. We have a narration panel and then we have Mr. Jackson talking to Marjorie Farnsworth, who is his secretary, who they made it a point to give her first and last name and is the one that Lois was trying to buddy up to get information, to get access ultimately to Jackson's office. When she saw Nelson go in. So this was the secretary. As I said, in two different panels, we get her first name and then we get her last name. So Marjorie Farnsworth apparently is important enough that we get the whole name. Now we get back to Superman, who is bounced. And instead of holding, although this counts, it's a subset of the count that I've been making, as is the other one. That's a subset. You don't know it was Superman because you couldn't see him. But come on, it was Superman.
Yeah,
so
it counts.
So that's a holding sub, you know, shadow. And this is sub because actually what he's doing is he's jumped up and he's reached out with one foot And with one muscular foot and leg, he's holding himself out, suspended from the window, with just his tippy toe on the eve of the windowsill, so that he can look in and once again see what Jackson is doing. So this is Jackson calling to say that he's getting ready to bug out because Superman saw him. And whoever he's talking to tells him, well, no, since you've got Superman there, I'll give you $100,000 if you take care of Superman. So he just spent 50. And so if he does this, he can make that back plus another 50. So he'll be pretty good. Mm-hmm. We then cut to Jackson's office again, although that doesn't look like Jackson. Isn't that where Marjorie Farnsworth is?
And then, yeah, it's the office, but that's just some other dude that
works in the office. Yeah, I guess, another person in the Nelson and Lassiter, whatever kind of offices. Are they lawyers?
It's a jewelry store, which is weird that they have a receptionist.
Jackson. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a Jackson. Yeah. A jewelry store with offices and, like it's a corporate part of the jewelry, like a chain or something. So again, Lois now has information that she's going to use through her knowledge of Marjorie and family and pretending to be a friend. She sneaks a ledger and a small black book. Yeah, of course, the little black book and the ledger from Jackson's office while this other dude here has his back turned. And before she can leave with these items, a couple of the thugs, presumably the two dudes that had kidnapped Clark and threw him out of the car and all that stuff, come into Jackson's office to update Jackson on all the happenings because this is the first time, I guess, they finally were able to get away from the massive police chase where the whole city turned out after him.
And did you mention that Lois's clever disguise that she's wearing?
Oh, she's wearing a pair of glasses. And I mean, why not? Because it worked. It continues to work for Clark. Going on, 90 years, 80 years, 80 some years, it's been enough of a disguise for Clark. Lois, unbeknowing, decides to try it too. That's all she needs is a pair of glasses. Well, we find out that perhaps it's not sufficient because these two thugs are like, something about her. And they start to hassle her and finally grab her up and take the glasses off. And they're like, it's what I thought. You're Lois Lane. I know you. And so now her disguise is blown. The thugs tell Jackson who she is. She's a reporter. They know that she was involved with talking to the heirs also. So some aspect of that side of things they know she's involved with. Well, Jackson says, if that's the case, then what we'll do is we'll just grab you up and we'll throw you in the safe here. And it's a big, huge walk-in safe. We'll throw you in the safe and keep you handy while we, take off, I guess. I don't think they really say. They capture her and I decide the best thing to do is to throw her in the safe. To keep her quiet, I guess maybe they know if she stays in the safe long enough, she'll die because there's an air problem. So maybe they're trying to kill her. I don't know, but they just put her in there to hold her. And as soon as they do, Superman comes in the window. Now, unfortunately, we don't know that he's been waiting there, or is he still? I guess he's still out there from when he was standing on the sill. So he saw all this. He saw Lois come in. He saw her disguise be broken by the guy, saw her get thrown in the safe, and then finally steps in to decide to do something. They pull out pistols, bullets, no effect. Second time in recent memory that he has punched or thrown guns through the wall.
Yeah.
He actually says that. The narrator tells us he hurls them clear through the wall.
I think it was second story in the issue when with the other swamp mm-hmm. story throws him through that shack because they're like
through the shack. Yeah.
They don't believe he's who he says he is until he throws the guns through the wall. Then they're like, whoa.
So he disarms them. Jackson. Now, he has a better gun because his gun shoots corrosive bullets. Mm. So that'll make the difference. He fires. They make it a point of showing that it bounces off of Superman and hits the safe. No, I don't know if that – it's not necessary to weaken the safe for Superman to do anything to it. did this bullet perhaps go through and maybe it threatened Lois is why they showed that, because it was able to go completely through the safe being corrosive?
Yeah, it says it penetrates the thick steel door and he's like, Lois, within the safe, perhaps she's injured.
Yeah, so Superman runs over, rips the door off the safe, pulls Lois out, throws the bad guys in, and jams the safe door back up there. Would have been cool if he'd used some heat vision to kind of weld the door, yeah. But he doesn't do that yet. So that's not happening. Rescued Lois, Superman leaps, and actually they show him leaping out of a window to a nearby building where he sets her down. The building that they're on is the police prosecutor's office. So it apparently is right across the street from Jackson's Jewelry Company. Not that that necessarily makes any difference, but there we go. That's what we're shown. Superman flies off. Lois is going to go down and, I guess, file a report about what she knows. Next up, we see the bad guys and Jackson. They're able to break their way out of that safe where they were put up. Jackson makes a call, and we see the other side of the call now. And or do we? Is this Lassiter that takes this call? Jackson makes his call. I know of a way we can cover the Carling killing. Now listen. Yes, yeah, yeah. See, so I think that this is Jackson calling one of his cohorts.
Yeah.
And the cohort is who we see here. So that means that this would have to be either Nelson or Lassiter. So I'm going to assume it's Lassiter because of what happens a little bit later here.
Yeah.
Third instance in this issue of Superman hanging outside a window. This time, the window is at the corner of a building. And so what Superman has done is he's flown and he's clasped onto the corner of the building like you would a pole if you were climbing a pole or a tree or something like that. So he's holding on, peering in the window, listening as he's at Metropolis Tower. So he is listening to the phone call here between Jackson and Lassiter, which this would be Lassiter's office because that's where the, what do they call it? Metropolis Tower. That's where all of this started. So this is Lassiter's office, which reinforces that this is Lassiter taking a call from Jackson, which overall I agree with those people that are saying, you know, well, what difference does it make necessarily who is doing what? I guess my point in trying to point that out is how difficult sometimes it is to keep up with who is doing what, just because of the nature of the artwork and the coloring and whatnot.
Yep.
Ultimately, in the story, does it matter? Overall, no. But as you're going through the story, it's kind of nice to be able to keep up with who's zooming who and whose boots are under whose bed and, you know, what have you. So next up, we are at the prosecutor's office, which is where Lois was dropped off. So she's talking to the prosecutor. She's handing over the two books that she has. One is a ledger, which I think it even said it was a ledger. The little black book, though, it turns out, has a code. And I guess the code allows you to break something that is written in the ledger to fully understand all of the numbers. So I guess something in the ledger is coded. And this is the key to that code is the way I saw that.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages. And now back to the Superman Super Show.
It can be seen that Morton Carling was murdered for $50,000 paid by George Steele, one of the heirs. So finally, we get a name for one of the 40, George Steele. I want to say that George Steele was a big, gruff, bear-looking dude that wrestled in like the 40s and 50s. George Steele.
George the Animal.
Was his name Steele? George.
I think so. I'll look it up.
It sounds familiar for some reason, and that's what I pictured was that wrestler. I know that probably isn't the reference that they're making, but that just popped into my head when I read that. So Lois and, of course, Sergeant Casey and overall their other squad cars are going to the Jackson Jewelry Company because she knew via, that's him.
George the Animal Steele. Yep.
Steele. Okay. That's cool. memory doesn't fail me for once. Going to see whatever, she's lost track of Clark. She doesn't know necessarily what Superman's doing, but she knows that her next step is at this Jackson Jewelry Company with the police in tow because of the little black book in the ledger here. So they head off that way. We go to the Jackson Steel Company. Jackson Jewelry Company. And we have Mr. Jackson, Mr. Nelson, and Mr. Lassiter, all of the namesakes for the two companies, and all three of the bigwigs, as far as we know in this. So they're all there, talk about who's going to do what and everything, and finalize all of this and put all of this stuff to rest. Well, Nelson decides that he is going to poison Jackson, okay? Now, Nelson and Lassiter are working together up to a point. Lassiter was not key on Nelson poisoning Jackson. He didn't know about that. That is probably an attempt to take out one person that knows, and so there's one less person that can turn evidence on the whole thing. Superman comes in just in time to save Jackson from taking the poison. When he hears...
If I can interrupt.
Yes.
It's Jackson is the one who puts the poison. It's Nelson that Jackson is trying to kill. Nelson is the guy, I guess he doesn't.
Oh, yes.
He's their loose end.
Right. Yeah. So he and Lassiter, I think, are involved in some shenanigans.
Yeah.
Because Lassiter admits that, but not necessarily all of this stuff with the killing and the air and all that. So in finding out that his buddy here, his co-conspirator, was going to be killed because of something he knows, Lassiter just turns, basically states evidence on all of it. And there's this little soliloquy. He says, Lassiter here, trying to sneak out and leave me in the lurch, huh? Well, then listen to this. Lassiter hired one of my men to bash and shove Carling through the window when Nelson was out of the room. He had Nelson buy that worthless diamond for him. And now, he wanted me to poison Nelson so that it would look like suicide. Then he was going to pin all the blame on Nelson. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That is Jackson, right?
Yeah. I guess it's Lassiter that's like, my partner and accomplice in murder? If that's true, I insist he be prosecuted.
Right.
And that's so when Jackson's like, oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you
Lassiter
about Lassiter.
Didn't know any of this. Yeah. So the story and then this little thing here just left me kind of confused. It wasn't, I don't think, necessarily as clear as it could have been done. So plus again, you've got the three men and they look just very, very similar, you know, when you look at them. And so.
Yeah. So basically the Lassiter and Jackson were working together. Nelson, I guess, didn't quite understand what was going on. Lassiter used Nelson to buy the diamond for $50,000. And then they were going to poison Nelson and kill him to make it look like a suicide. And then Lassiter was going to blame it all on Nelson. This is all Nelson. We didn't know anything about it. Obviously, it weighed on his conscience because he killed himself.
So then with the jig being up, Nelson decides that he's going to try to run away. He's going to shoot Lassiter. Superman intervenes, grabs that bullet. That's... He hasn't grabbed bullets with his hands or blocked them with his hands very often. So this is one of the few times so far he's done that. I know he has actually snatched them a couple times with the fingers there, punk, just plucking them out of the air. So then Nelson gets away, runs down to a car, tries to get away, but Superman grabs the car and flips it over on its roof, killing it. No, we don't know that it killed him, but I don't know how you could truly toss a car like this and not. And the person inside live. But yeah. So that's what he did. I guess the police round everybody up. We have the final panel where it has become the competition between Lois and Clark as to who gets the story in about what we saw in the story. Who gets the paper story in. So here, Clark, I'm still trying to figure out how you could have rushed that murder ring story into print before I did. And Clark says, maybe I have more ability than you give me credit for. And inside, he says, so far she hasn't guessed at my real identity as Superman, but this can't go on forever. Someday I'll make a slip, and then...
Bum, bum, bum.
So, you said that the title of the story, what was the exact title again?
Jackson's
Murder Ring. Was a double entendre. What were the two entendres,
if that's a word? Because you can get a ring at a jewelry store.
Okay, so that was the second. The first one was the obvious murder and everything. And being a jeweler, you can get a ring.
Yeah, that's why I was like, sort of.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't use a ring for anything. That would have been obvious double entendre. Lois faked and bought an engagement ring to get involved or something like that. And it would have.
And this could be one of those, because a lot of these stories, if, you know, when I'm putting the notes together and I go to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, they always have like notes. And most of these stories were originally untitled. And it's like DC titles them after the fact. So
probably when they start reproducing them to be able to keep them separate and call them up and all that kind of stuff.
So had they come up with the idea back then to calling the story Jackson's Murder Ring, maybe they would have included an actual ring to be part of the murder weapon thing.
To double entendre it, to make it that much funnier. I don't know if kids back then would have necessarily gotten that or not. Hard to say. Okay, so this finishes up Superman issue number 9. What were your thoughts, if you have any left, about the story, and what were your thoughts about the issue as a whole?
The story I really enjoyed. A lot of stuff going on. The ending, I had to really go through the ending a couple of times to really understand what was happening, you know, to really understand that, you know, Jackson gets away from the jewelry store. He calls up, "Hey, I got away. I gave Superman the slip." And whoever's on the other line says, "Well, I know how we can wrap this all up and get away with everything." And so I guess that idea was for Jackson to poison Nelson so that he and Lassiter could blame it all on Nelson. And then, but there's so much going on. And again, the art, because when we go back to Lois going into Jackson's jewelry store, we were really confused about the guy that's in there. Is that Jackson? Because the guy's bald on top and Jackson has a mustache, but Jackson's ledger and his little black book are just there on the counter. So unless Jackson just leaves that shit all over the place and, you know, without worrying that anybody would look at it, that's got to be Jackson. But it's not the same color suit. I don't know. Cassidy's got to do a bit better.
Maybe some of our art concerns, if you want to use that word, maybe they would be relieved if we were able to actually look at physical copies of the book, not microfiche copies, because that even messes up the color and things like that. Maybe in the actual book, if we had it physically and were able to look through, maybe the artwork would be a little bit more clear, particularly as far as coloring goes. I do not like the recolored reproductions of these Golden Age stories in these books. I don't like this method that they use at all. I wish they wouldn't, but I guess it must be money, because whatever method they use seems to be what they do over and over. DC, in just about any of these Golden Age compendiums that they put out, I've looked at Batman, I've looked at Wonder Woman and Superman, and it's this oversaturated, it just, the coloring is just bad.
Yeah.
Fortunately, this is not how the coloring looked then, or I don't like the color.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that Lois's car changes color a couple of times. Casey's car, the police car, changes color a couple of times. It's just,
Now, I will say, of course, there are coloring errors. There's even coloring errors that pop up now in modern comic books. You know, stuff like that is going to happen. But I can't help but think that some amount is the transfer of whatever original they're using to making these reproductions to, okay. As far as this story, I did enjoy this quite a bit too. This one and the previous story, very, very complex. A little difficult. I found this one a little bit more difficult to follow than the previous story. So the final story in the book was the most trying mentally on me. And so, you know, if I wasn't already tired from reading, you know, 4 Golden Age stories in a Superman, the last one was a little tough to follow. And okay, what were your thoughts on this issue of Superman?
It was an excellent issue. Most of these issues of Superman, there's usually at least one of the stories that I haven't really cared for that I can recall. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been a year since we come back to do these, but I feel like my memory is that every one of these Superman issues, there's been at least one story that has just been kind of eh. But yeah. I really enjoyed all 4 of these. Third one, my favorite of the 4. Good issue.
I will go so far as to say, I hope, having reached this particular plateau, that the writing is able to maintain this moving forward in the Superman books. Because if we start getting a book with 4 stories like this every time, these are going to be just massively fun to read.
Yes.
I don't know if that's possible, but I, at this point, after reading issue 9, I can certainly have hopes for issue 10, and I'll just move forward with that.
And of course, issue 10 is the issue where they officially admit that he's flying.
Okay. I look forward to seeing that. And before that, though, let me throw out, I mentioned this a couple episodes back. The next episode, we will be talking about a Superman story in a book that we have not talked about yet. Basically, we've been talking about just 2 books, Action Comics and then Superman's eponymous title, the Superman book.
We've had the 2 New York Fair comics, but
that's right.
Those were one-offs.
So this is a new book. This one should, I think, enter, I don't know if it enters the rotation right off the bat, but it will quickly enter the rotation of yet another Superman book that we have stories from.
Well, go ahead and tell everybody what we're going to be looking at next.
The next story is going to be a story from World's Best Comics, the first issue, which with the second issue, I believe, is going to be called World's Finest Comics. So that will be our next. And this the cover that I have in this compendium is a cover of Superman, Batman, and Robin. And it tells us also that Zatara is included in this. So it's another anthology book. And right now, I don't know because I haven't. I try not to look too much ahead so that everything that I say is relatively fresh. I try not to can too much of my thoughts and anything like that. So I haven't looked at this. I don't know. The cover tells me there'll be at least 3 stories. I don't know if that's all that there is or not.
Looking at Mike's Amazing World of Comics, of course, we get 1 Superman story.
Right.
But there's a total of 11 stories. Superman, Red, White, and Blue. Don't know what that is.
That's listed here on the cover, too. I thought,
Crimson Avenger.
Okay, I know him.
Johnny Thunder.
I know him.
Young Doc Davis.
Nope.
Zatara.
Know him.
Drafty.
Nope.
King.
Nope.
Punch Parker.
No.
Lando, Man of Magic.
Nuh-uh.
And the Batman story.
Okay. So there are 11 stories in 96, and that's what the cover tells us here, 96 pages. So either all of them are relatively short, or some are going to be significantly shorter to give more pages to Superman and Batman, which I imagine would be the big ones. Crimson Avenger and Johnny Thunder, I also know from JSA. So they're moderately popular. Zatara, moderately. The other characters, including Red, White, and Blue, I don't believe I've ever even heard of any of the other characters. Perhaps someone who's listening that is more versed in DC Golden Age, maybe those characters will ring names. Like I know that like in Action Comics, you know, there's 8 or 9 stories there full of people that I have no idea who they are because my interest has always been in the superheroes. So the doctors and the adventures and the romance-y kind of things. I'm not as familiar with those.
Well, I can tell you that the Superman and the Batman stories are each 13 pages each.
Okay.
Each 13 pages each. Zatara is 9 pages. And then at the lowest page count is the Drafty story at 4 pages.
Ooh, wow.
And okay. The others are 6 to 8 pages.
Okay. So the two big namesakes do have more pages, which you would expect. But okay. Well, cool. So that is just one of the stories that we'll talk about next video recording.
Yeah.
So.
And then when we just, as far as the frequency of this book, when we get to issue number 2, Mike's Amazing World of Comics has it listed as a quarterly book. So like
okay.
Superman is quarterly. So
Right. So it will drop into our rotation. Hard to say how frequently the stories will come out of this. We'd have to look at the index of this book.
Looks like we have all the same characters in the second issue too. Superman, okay. Red, White, and Blue, Crimson Avenger, Johnny Thunder, Young Doc Davis, Zatara, Drafty, King.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So that cool. I'll hold any other thoughts until we talk about this book. But that's cool. So we're starting to expand our Superman universe.
Yeah.
Into, you know, some of the books that we know and are familiar with now as we sit here that we know Superman has been in. We're starting to see them come up. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to it. I paged through the story just to see if it was going to be 13 pages like the others. Mm-hmm. I didn't really pay attention to what was going on. I have no idea. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you just who I think the artist might be. And I closed that page down, so I couldn't tell you who it's going to be. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to jumping into it brand new and keep up with that Superman goodness. And I would like to think if they're going to start a whole new title that's going to feature a Superman story, that first issue should have a pretty good story in it, I would like to think.
It should, but yeah, we'll have to see. Where are we at in the omnibus here? Are we 157 pages out of, how many pages are in this bag?
376.
Boy? Yeah, so we're getting close to about halfway through volume 3.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
And it's weird to see the cover of this World's Best and see that big smile on Batman's face.
Well, but he smiles a lot in the Golden Age.
Does he?
Yeah, he's not gotten grim and gritty yet. I mean, you know, you fight crime for 90 years and the Joker gets out of prison every 2 months and see how much you smile.
I need to start reading those Golden Age Batmans because I've read, of course, Detective 27. I mean, that's kind of one of those that you have to read. And I know that Bruce Wayne spends a lot of time in that story being all like, ho-hum, I'm a bored rich kid, you know?
Yes. Batman and Robin do not have the kind of capabilities to rely on like Superman does.
Yeah.
So writing just another schmo, except in an outfit who's kind of brainy, it gives those Golden Age Batman stories a whole different kind of feel than what the Golden Age Superman stories do.
Yeah, I had to start reading them.
But they're every bit as much fun.
Yeah.
Batman, you know, you have the gimmicks. You have that funky car that he drives. You have the funky boat and the funky plane and the, you know. So they're a lot of fun. I started reading the Golden Age omnibus for Batman, the first one. I don't know if I ever got out of the first one before my mind just drifted and I went on to other things. But
yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
And I'm pretty sure I have those. I know that there was a time where, let me look online.
Well, if Superman is on Hoopla, I'm sure Batman is. Probably Wonder Woman is also.
Yeah, I can't do Hoopla anymore, but I know that...
I'm sorry. Yeah, you told me that. Didn't mean to rub it in.
Yeah, I've got volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Batman and the Golden Age. They, you know, every once in a while, they have really good sales on Comixology, and I grab up a bunch of stuff that...
Get them that way.
I haven't read yet, but my butt hurts. Sorry.
Well, I think we're at a place where we can finalize things and head out.
Steven mentioned that his butt hurts, so I guess we should wrap this up.
It's time to go. That's the sign.
It's like when not
one of these or one of these, but my butt hurts.
Steven's rubbing at his butt.
Yep. The donut cushion is not working as well as it did when we first started.
That's how I play you off.
Yeah. I don't know, Ed. My butt hurts. Yeah, okay. We don't want to talk about that. It's okay. I'm sorry.
It's a very highly creative code word. My butt hurts. Okay, let's wrap it up.
All right, then. That's it for us, guys. Which, actually, do you have anything else to add?
You know, I felt like I did, but I don't think I do. Good story, great issue. Looking forward to just keeping on, keeping on.
I think our stop and start for the show happened at a pretty good place, because since we have resumed, the stories have been very entertaining compared to what they were in season one, or whatever you want to call the Hinter years. It's definitely been very enjoyable coming back into these Golden Age Superman stories.
Yep.
All right, folks, and all of you that may be listening on YouTube and nobody commented, we want to thank you for listening. So until next week, I am Ed, that is Steven, and this was the Superman Super Show.
Bye.
Ciao.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.